You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
It's O-Behave with Arden Moore, the show that teaches you how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Join Arden as she travels coast to coast to help millions better understand why cats and dogs do what they do. Get the latest scoop on famous faces, their perfectly pampered pets, and who's walking who in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails, garner great pet tips, and have a doggone fur-flying fun time. So get ready for the pause and applause as we unleash your O-Behave host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome to the O-Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. O-Behave! Oh, how appropriate. Summer's here. Many of us love to go out and about with our favorite four-legger. Now, like many of you, I often say a little prayer to the doggy gods whenever I leash up my pair, Shipper and Cleo, and get ready to head to a pet welcoming outdoor cafe or to the local dog park. Will they be tail wagging angels or canine Dennis the Menaces? You know, most of the time they behave actually better than I do. But when it comes to bringing out the best in our dogs, we all could use a great teacher who can turn our devil dogs into what I call PhDs. That's pretty happy dogs. So, listeners, we're in luck. Our special guest today is Steve Applebaum, president of the Animal Behavior College. He's one of the top dogs on the planet when it comes to dog training. And for the past decade, he's literally taught thousands of people on the ABCs of proper dog training. Hey, welcome to the show, Steve.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, Steve and I, we have never met. We've sort of been around the different circles, and we were just talking about that earlier before the show. We've snipped the same trees, but not at the same time. So I feel very fortunate to have him on as a guest. He's going to unleash some wise advice to make our outings with our canine pals fun and adventurous right after we take this commercial break. So sit and stay. We'll be right back.
Time for a pause. Four furry ones, actually. Sit and stay. O-Behave will be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pet Life Radio proudly presents DSPN, the Dog Sports and Performance Network. Get ready to unleash the dog sports enthusiast in all of us. From speed drawing and mushing to racing, agility, and competition, this is the place to learn all about the dog sports and activities that you can do with your furry best friend and canine competitor. So get ready for game time. DSPN with your host, Lori Williams. Every week, on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. O-Behave is back with more tail-wagging ways to achieve harmony in the household with your pets. Now back to your fetching host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome back to the O-Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Our great guest is Steve Applebaum, president of Animal Behavior College. Now, this is a national school that teaches us two-leggers how to become professional trainers for those four-leggers and occasional three-leggers. He started the school back in 1998, and he has literally graduated thousands from all over North America. Yes, including our Canadian neighbors. Are you listening? Hey? All right, now Steve is here to educate us on some of the do's and don'ts of dog training. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
All right, let's just get right into it. I mean, Animal Behavior College, that ranks right up there with Princeton and my alma mater, Purdue, right? It probably actually gives you...
Well, I think it's a great school, but I'm not going to say that it's going to rank with Princeton or Purdue. But
okay.
It's for people that are interested in making their passion for animals a career, essentially mm-hmm. being able to make a living doing something they love and being able to make a difference, it's a wonderful opportunity for them.
Well, let's backtrack, you know, before 1998, and I have no idea what kind of hairstyle you had back then or what kind of your taste in clothing, but what said to you, where was the light bulb that said, you know what, there's a lot of dog trainers out there, but there's always this haziness on whether they're properly certified and all that. So let's go back in time. Let's go in our time machine and zip back before 1998. What was it that got you going to create Animal Behavior College?
Actually, I had another business prior to Animal Behavior College called Animal Behavior and Training Associates. And at that time, this company had the contract to teach all of the obedience classes for a very large national chain. And that chain was Petco.
I've heard of them.
The biggest challenge we had in those days was trying to find enough trainers to offer classes in all of their stores. And at any given time, we were 100 stores short, meaning that out of the 400, 500, 600 stores in their chain, there were always at least 100 that we couldn't find trainers for. It's just very, very difficult. We tried everything. And then it occurred to us that what we really needed to do was to create our own trainers. And this was especially obvious to us because when we looked to hire trainers, we asked that they have at least 2 years professional experience and that they pass a series of tests, so that we could ensure that we had the best quality trainers out there. And the challenge was is that up to 70% of all of the trainers that took this exam failed. We were shocked.
Wow.
It became very obvious to us that not only was there a shortage of professional trainers, but that many of these trainers were not up to anything close to a national standard, because there was no national standard. And so we started the school in 1998 as a way of finding trainers for this other company. And this was something that we were going to need. We weren't just looking to create something where we could certify trainers and then they go out on their own and it wouldn't matter to us. I mean, we were acutely interested in the end product because we were planning on hiring the graduates to work for Animal Behavior and Training Associates, teaching all these classes across the country. I realized almost immediately that this business had the potential to do more good and to be a better business than the one I was in at the time. And so for a while, I ran both businesses. And then in 2004, Petco bought me out of the... at that point, the school was basically standing on its own. And by then, we had students in all 50 states and every Canadian province. We thought it would be popular, but we were stunned at the sheer volume of people that wanted to pursue this dream.
And, you know, and you also have an easier name now, Animal Behavior College. That's pretty easy, ABC.
But ABC is very easy.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Let's talk about some of the people that want to get this degree. You know, a lot of us like to pursue our passions. So what sets Animal Behavior College different than some of the other places that are out there that people can and maybe get certified in dog training? What sets you? What makes you the Great Dane of all these groups?
Well, I think the major difference is in the way the school is structured. And that really harks back to when we were looking to originally create the school. You know, back in 1998, which, you know, it's obviously not that long ago, I was looking, when I first visualized the school, I visualized a traditional brick-and-mortar campus. You know, somewhere, some sort of a classroom where you could learn some of the theoretical aspects of behavior, dog breeds, and then, of course, some sort of physical outside classroom location where you could actually do the training. And the challenge I had at the time was that I needed trainers throughout the entire country, and it simply was not practical for me to have 7 or 8 or 10 campuses all across the country. I didn't have the resources to do that. So that wasn't a feasible model. Then I looked at mail order correspondence type programs, which you know, are a very, very old concept. I mean, the internet has put a slightly different wrinkle on that, but it's still a fairly old concept. And that wasn't going to work either, because obviously in creating dog trainers, in teaching dog trainers, we needed to have a program that would give them a physical experience. I mean, they have to have practical experience along with the theoretical knowledge we teach them. So the two models for schools that I knew about weren't going to work. I was actually stymied for about 6 months, and then it occurred to me that there'd be the possibility of a third model, which is how we structured the program. And that was to basically say that a percentage of the program could be done in a distance learning capacity. You don't need to travel you know, halfway across the country, quit your job, live in a hotel or a motel or a dorm, just to learn the difference between positive and negative punishment. Okay, you can learn many of these things at home, but when it comes to the practical experience, when it comes to the actual hands-on working with the dogs, that's something that you would need to actually go out and get. And so we created a network of trainers. I had a huge network of trainers through my other company at this time. And so we created basically a network of trainers in which, as a student, you could take the program at home, and then when it came time to get the practical experience, which is about three-quarters of the way through the course, we would set you up with a mentor, a trainer that we have screened, that you could go watch their actual classes, not laboratory models, not theoretical things, but actual real-world classes.
Real fur, right? Real drool.
Yes, and then along with the observation, you would be able to participate in assisting this trainer in actually helping them train the students in the class. So that when you were done with this, you had some very vital practical experience to go with your theoretical understanding. And that combination is very unique. Most of the other schools out there, and there's some outstanding schools out there, and I invite anybody that's interested in looking seriously, if this is as a career, to look at the various options, because no one option, including ours, is right for everybody, just like a Great Dane isn't necessarily the breed for each person. The real advantage to our program is that you don't have to quit your job. You don't have to move somewhere for 6 to 8 or 12 weeks. Most people can't afford to do that. And because we don't have the expense of huge college campus or gigantic office building where we've got all these classrooms, we've been able to keep our tuition costs significantly lower than what some of the other schools are offering. So it's really a program for adults that are looking to transition into another career. Interestingly, about 15% of our demographic is over 55. Many of these people are extremely successful in their previous careers. We've had literally attorneys, doctors. We just graduated an anesthesiologist from this program. She was done. I mean, she practiced medicine for 35 years, and she wanted to pursue another dream in her life, and it didn't make a difference to her whether she would be taking a drastic cut in pay. We get a pretty good percentage of our student body that never charges for their services once they graduate our program. They go and volunteer at animal shelters and just work on making a difference there. So it's really an extraordinary business on a whole host of different levels.
Steve, on your website, which is, let's make sure we get that right, animalbehaviorcollege.com, correct?
Yes, that
okay.
is correct.
I was sniffing around, and I was looking at some of the recent stories of graduates, and, you know, you just nailed it. They are from all walks of life, and I think even more now in this economy, which is trying everyone and bringing out senses of humor. Don't you think that in some way this economy is just helping us really start focusing on what our true passions are?
Absolutely. I think that what the economic situation has caused a lot of people to do is to seriously look at alternatives. Mm-hmm. And for many people, this is a very, very viable alternative. So the number of people that inquire about our program is up 20% this year.
Wow.
Now, that doesn't mean that people that have actually enrolled is up 20%, but
right.
the number of people that have inquired is up significantly, and it has been since this whole financial meltdown.
Yeah, really I live in California. I mean, I don't know about you, but we put the capital F in foreclosure.
Yes, I'm also in California, so I'm very familiar with that. But we've seen it across the country, and it does seem to. There is a direct correlation between the more significantly impacted areas in the country and the number of potential students that we're getting. I mean, we know, for example, that Michigan has been particularly hard hit by this recession, you know, in part because, of course, of the auto industry being there. And we've gotten huge increases in the number of inquiries from states like Michigan and, of course, California. Since we're based out here, and our first, really, our first advertising was out here. we get a huge chunk of our students from California. But it is important to note that it doesn't matter where you live in the country. We have mentors in every state. And as well as you mentioned earlier, in Canada as well, 7% of our student body comes from Canada, and it's a very, very popular and vibrant program there as well.
Okay. Well, we're speaking with Steve Applebaum. He is the president of the Animal Behavior College, and he's going to give us some tips on with the summer underway. Many of us like to go out and about with our dogs, and I'm hoping that he can share some ways that we can make those outings fun and safe and not doggy disasters. So we're going to take it. That's right. We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be right back. So sit and stay.
Time for a pause. Four furry ones actually sit and stay. Obehave will be right back.
School's in session on Pet Life Radio with Teacher's Pet. Learn how to communicate with your pet, train your pet, and see the world from your pet's point of view. You may even learn a few tricks yourself. Teacher's Pet, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Hi, this is Betty White, and I'm inviting you to tune in to the Obehave Show with Arden Moore on Pet Life Radio.
Obehave is back with more tail-wagging ways to achieve harmony in the household with your pets. Now, back to your fetching host, America's Pet Edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Obehave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Our special guest is Steve Applebaum. He is the president of the Animal Behavior College. It's a North American school, as he's been explaining, that really, really, really tries to give you both theoretical, but most importantly, practical knowledge on all things DOG. Dogs come in all different sizes and shapes and personalities and temperaments, and you can have a calm Jack Russell and a hyper Great Dane. And so we're very lucky that we have people with Steve's credentials that are out there giving us the real skinny on our tail waggers. You know, Steve, let's get right into it. My dog is now barking in the background. Perfect timing, Chipper. Thank you so much. So for many of us, we love to be out this summer with our dogs, but we really could use a little help from somebody who knows all things about DOGs. And that's why I'm hoping, Steve, we can get right into it. Some of the doggy do's and don'ts when we're out and about with our dogs. You know, I get a little nervous sometimes when I see outdoor cafes and dog parks and, you know, pet-friendly hotels, and then I see that they're not there anymore, or they have more restrictive policies when it comes to our pets. It seems like us two-leggers sometimes screw up a really good opportunity.
Yes, I think that's true. I think a lot of times what happens is that people have a tendency to run before they can walk. I know that's cliche, but in this case, uh-huh. It's absolutely true. You know, before you take your dog to an outdoor cafe, or really into any public place in which the dog is going to be interacting with a great many people and other dogs, possibly there's traffic, you know, bicycles, skateboarders. I mean, you can picture it.
Right.
really, before the dog is expected to be responsive to cues, to listen, in a situation like that, it's important to build a foundation. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the dog doesn't respond around the house with little or nothing going on, why would the dog be responsive to your voice and to your cues amongst a much more difficult set of circumstances which an outdoor cafe would present? Distractions are always tougher. So yeah. I recommend to anybody that before you take the dog out and expect to have the dog responding to you in public, it really is important to teach the dog some of the basics, you know, starting in private and then graduating to in and around your neighborhood. And then once the dog is responsive there, then gradually take the dog to more difficult and distracting environments. And if you do that over a period of several months, you'll find that you can pretty much take the dog anywhere and have decent control, and to do it in a very positive way. I mean, we're not talking about turning the dogs into robots or using vicious techniques in training. It can be done in a very gentle, positive fashion, but it's important to realize that to do that, it has to be done in steps. The first step is little or no distractions.
Right. Build on your successes, you're saying.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Another general piece of advice I'd like to give to everybody is you want to focus less on what the dog is doing wrong and more on what the dog is doing right. Remember that positive reinforcement of appropriate behavior. I should actually amend that. Positive reinforcement of any behavior reinforces that behavior. So
That's true.
It another way, if the dog is rewarded for doing something, there's an excellent likelihood that the dog will do that again. And that's exactly true in people as well. I mean, most people do what feels good for them.
Yeah, if somebody tickles my tummy, I'll do anything they tell me. You know, I'm pretty good about that. It's a positive reinforcement. I don't
Absolutely.
Need any doggy treats. Just, you know, tickle my tummy. That's good.
my basset hound is precisely the same way.
Oh, we have something in common. Okay. What's your dog's name?
Buford.
Buford? Why do they always have cool names if you're a basset hound? Buford. Awesome. How old is Buford?
Oh, thank you. His full name is Buford Hound O' Burning Love, but as you can well imagine, Buford kind of rolls off the tongue just a little bit easier. So, yeah.
Anyway, and I did want to give a shout-out. I was thinking about it. You did write a book, The ABC Practical Guide to Dog Training by Howell, and that's not Howell like you're howling, but H-O-W-E-L-L. So hoping that all the listeners will also dash out and make you a very rich author in addition to checking out the animalbehaviorcollege.com site. But, you know, we sometimes trip ourselves up, don't we?
Well, we do. I mean, let's face it. The dog does not come with an instruction manual. I mean, books like mine can help, but I mean, let's face it. It's very normal for people to default back into behaviors that come naturally to them, and especially if a pet parent isn't clear about how to properly train their dog. They can give the dog, not deliberately, but they can give the dog some very inconsistent messages.
Give us an example. You know, give us a couple examples, if you would.
Okay, a couple of examples. So we'll take a behavioral challenge, and we'll take a behavioral cue. The behavioral challenge. The dog barks excessively. And a lot of times when I see excessively barking dogs, especially the smaller ones, what the parent will do is they will pick the dog up, and they'll pet the dog and calm the dog down in an attempt to stop the dog from barking and to let the dog know that everything is okay, not to feel anxious, and to basically calm down. And it oftentimes works in the moment. But what people don't realize is that what they're actually doing is they're rewarding the barking response and almost guaranteeing that the behavior will continue. Another example, you give the dog, you've got a puppy. Okay, and since I believe statistically there are still more puppies sold in the month of December than the rest of the year combined.
Holy Santa Claus.
Stats I remember from a couple of years ago. It may have changed, but it's still a huge, huge number, which is one of the reasons, by the way, that dog trainers traditionally are busiest during the first two quarters of the year because a lot of those holiday puppies are coming of age. So now, a lot of these dogs are 6-7 months of age, and if people haven't started them in training already, they're certainly getting ready to now because it's summertime and they're rather large puppies, or they're going out in the yards and the puppies are there, and it's much more critical for people in people's minds to train the dogs now than it may have been 3 or 4 months ago. But what a lot of people don't realize is from the very first moment you bring the dog home, you start the training process through your interaction with the dog. And so one of the most common challenges with young puppies, of course, is they're going through a teething exploration period, not dissimilar to that of a 2-year-old child, only instead of touching everything the way little children do, they want to put everything in their mouths, and they're teething besides. And so chewing becomes a real challenge. It's a normal behavior for dogs, but that doesn't mean it's acceptable when the dog is gnawing on your couch. And so what a lot of people do is they run upstairs and they grab a couple of old pairs of socks and they knot them up and they throw them to the dog, or they give the dog an old shoe, or they run out and they buy some fabric toys, thinking, well, the dog likes to chew fabric, as evidenced by the 3 holes in my couch and 2 in my rug. So if I give the dog these fabric items, you know, maybe he or she will stop chewing the inappropriate fabric items, which on a certain level makes sense. Except what you're really doing is you're telling the dog that it's okay to chew fabrics. And it's
right, because they can't distinguish,
the
right?
Absolutely.
A little 6-month-old Labrador is like, really? I don't know the difference between your couch and the store-bought toy, right?
precisely. And so, you know, those are some areas of what we call inadvertent inconsistencies. Another example would be along the lines of cues, which are sometimes called commands. You bring the puppy home, you put the dog down on the ground, the dog starts to sniff and wander off, and the dog grabs a pillow, okay, and tries to make off with it. And of course, you're amused initially, but you bend down and you say to the dog, "No, Buford, come here, sweetie, give that back, come here, come over here, come. And you tell the dog to come 9 times. And then ultimately walk over to the dog and take the pillow away. Now, multiply this by every single day for 6 months. And what you've essentially done, again, not deliberately, is you've taught the dog not to come the first time, or even the second, third, or eighth. And now suddenly you have the dog in a completely different set of circumstances, say, for example, in a public place, and you have the dog maybe on a retractable leash or maybe on no leash at all, hopefully not, but all too often I see this, where the dog isn't on any kind of a leash at all, and the dog maybe gets distracted and starts to head down towards the street, and you give the dog the come cue, because it's now very critically important that this dog responds, only instead of coming, the dog does exactly what she's done at home for the last 6 months, which is basically ignore you. That's right. Only that can be a very lethal situation. So all too often people teach their dogs not to run them, but they, of course, don't do this deliberately. So those are some examples of how you might focus on inappropriate behaviors. And especially getting back to the chewing, which is, I can give a very good example. Okay, so it's pretty tough to ignore the dog if the dog is chewing on your loafers or on your couch or on some sort of an inappropriate object. And if you see this, of course, it's best to redirect that behavior by giving the dog something that he should chew on. But the real key here is, in chewing, you're not going to stop a puppy from chewing. It's just one of those things that if you're lucky, the dog will outgrow in time. What you're really looking to do is you're looking to refocus the dog on chewing the appropriate items. Mm-hmm. You want to teach appropriate behaviors. Dogs are like people. They do what feels good. If you can teach them that appropriate behavior feels good, they will naturally be inclined to engage in appropriate behavior. Just understanding how to do that. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, in the case of chewing, it's a matter of strongly fixating the dog on some of the more appropriate items, based on the premise that if you can get the dog to chew the right things 70% more than he does now, then logically he's going to chew the wrong things 70% less. And that, coupled with some management tools, the same way you wouldn't leave a two-year-old child full run of the house unsupervised, you would be well advised not to do that with a young puppy either. Combined with that and some other things, you can get the situation well in hand without having to resort to, you know, draconian punishments or, you know, right, highly reactive kinds of things, which for most people isn't about cruelty. It's about them not really knowing a better way, and they're just frustrated. That's not to say that there aren't cruel people out there. I mean,
right.
Anybody that's been in this business for any length of time knows that, unfortunately, there are. But most people, if you can show them a better way, an effective, better way of handling their dog's behavior, they'll jump on it.
Now, speaking of that, I know there's one thing that seems to be a source of frustration for many folks who are lucky to have dogs is the leash. I mean, sometimes you feel like your shoulder has been separated from your socket. I did a little funny YouTube video where I was walking my two dogs, and then I had my brother, Kevin, who has a cat, a cool cat named Lager, and I handed the reins of Chipper, a 60-pounder, and Cleo, a 12-pounder, over to Kevin. And as soon as I started taping, the dogs went in opposite directions, and poor Kevin was betwixt and between. And the dogs had big, joyful grins on their face. But Kevin, who's taller and bigger than me, could not control these dogs. So it doesn't matter the size of the person holding the leash, it seems like. It seems like it's your attitude or your give us a little tips on leash walking, and is there anything out there that maybe can make this a little bit more enjoyable for you?
Yes. Going back to what I was suggesting a little bit earlier, if you can teach the dog to respond properly, to either do a loose leash walk or a heel with little or nothing going on, you're going to have a much better chance of being able to control that dog in more distracted circumstances.
Start at home.
Start at home. Teach the dog to respond, you know, in your yard or immediately around your house. Once the dog is responsive there, then start to branch off into the neighborhood, maybe go to a local park, you know, then find yourself a market or someplace that isn't super, super busy so you can get the dog used to moderate amounts of people, and then go to a busier one until ultimately you can get that dog to respond pretty much under all circumstances. It's just a matter of working up gradually. Retractable leashes are an outstanding tool as well, and on that one I will mention a brand, and that brand is Flexi. There are several retractable leashes out there, but I have found, and I've worked with retractable leashes for the better part of almost 30 years, that Flexi is the best by far of the various retractable leashes. It's very durable. It's got some excellent safety features on it. But the key to using Flexi is that it's really to be considered more of a tool for proofing already existing behavior. In other words, once the dog has learned to respond on a regular standard, which is typically a 6-foot training leash, and the dog will respond around distractions, then putting the dog on a Flexi basically allows you the ability to give the dog up to 30 feet while still being able to maintain control. Now, the only challenge with retractable leashes are if you take the dog out in a public place and you give the dog the full 30-foot length, that's likely to create a real problem because you can't control what other people are going to do. And of course, it's a tool like anything else. Best thing to do is when you get a tool like Flexi is read the safety instructions. Those are those 3 or 4 page manuals that most people just throw away without looking at.
Right.
It's actually worth spending 5 or 10 minutes and going over them and understanding the applications, because that'll save some challenges. Read the safety instructions and then just understand that it's a wonderful, wonderful tool, provided that the dog and you have attained a half-decent level of control. But then you can take the dog to a park, give the dog 20, 30 feet, and allow the dog to sniff and be a dog, secure in the knowledge that if you need to, you have the ability to get that dog to come back to you. You have a level of control that you just won't have on a regular leash from that distance.
Well, I got to tell you, Steve, I've always been a little nervous when I see people with retractable leashes, not the Flexi, but the other ones that are on those thin little wires. I've seen little dogs go trotting right into an elevator, and then the door starts shutting. I won't even tell you how many times I've rescued dogs from elevators because their owners are chatting away, the leash is long, they're not paying attention, and it can snap. But it seems like the Flexi, it's a lot more durable, and I think I like what you're saying. It's not something where you forget that there's a dog at the end of your leash. You really do still have to be vigilant, but you're allowing the dog to be a dog.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. The Flexi is a very durable product, which is one of the reasons that I recommended and recommended at the school. But it's a tool. And the same way you would never allow your 2-year-old child to go walking into an elevator unattended, regardless of whether you're on the phone or distracted, it's just not something that you would typically ever do, because you have to maintain a level of responsible diligence when you're with a small child. It's the same thing with a dog. I mean, there isn't a tool out there that wouldn't put the dog in danger if the dog walked into an elevator and the door closed and the elevator started to go up and you were still standing outside. I mean, that's a requiem for disaster. So it's just a matter of being very, very conscious, regardless of what you have the dog on. But yes, the Flexi is an outstanding tool, provided that it is used properly. And that's actually one of the reasons that we started recommending it at the college, was because we saw so many people that weren't using it properly. It becomes a matter of how we can most effectively influence the greatest numbers of people. We know that the average dog trainer, professional dog trainer, will work with anywhere from about 250 to about 400 people per year. Some will work with more, some will work with less, so that's an average. So if we have 2,000 dog trainers out there, each working with 250 people, that's a lot of people that they can impact and they can give proper messages to, including how to use these products in a way so that you don't see, scenarios with the elevator or dogs running into the street or, all the other horrible horrible.
I'm just glad I have very fast twitch muscles because, trust me, I've saved a few Yorkies from a fate, you know, going up while their people are looking elsewhere. I travel a lot with my dogs because I'm affiliated with Fido Friendly, the dog travel magazine, and whenever I bring them into a hotel, I'm very careful about keeping them on a closer leash, even if, you know, right next to me and having them sit like proper little girls with tails, because it's important because you want to have a good, a well-mannered dog. But there's been times where I've had to dash out and save a Yorkie going up an elevator.
Well, that's right. And that actually is a perfect example of how being vigilant is extremely, extremely important. These aren't even your dogs, but because you're conscious of the surroundings and what's going on, you have the ability to reach out and protect these dogs. So if more pet parents would learn that same level of vigilance, which in part is just about knowledge.
Right.
Fast twitch muscles, not as, that certainly helps. but it's really just about awareness. So the more people we can make aware, the less likelihood of these kinds of potentially horrible scenarios taking place.
Well, I'd like to end on a good note because, you know, you've been great to be on our show. We're speaking with Steve Applebaum. He is the president of Animal Behavior College. And when we're done with the show, you all have to dash over to animalbehaviorcollege.com and buy his book, too. He's got a book out there. What is it again? It's the ABCs of...
Yeah, the ABC Practical Guide to Dog Training.
That sounds easy. I like that. And, you know, it's nice that you are really passing on your knowledge to a legion of many so that we can walk our dogs properly, that we can use positive reinforcement of behavior we wish to have in our dogs. You said it right from the beginning. Dogs don't come with training manuals or instruction manuals. But, boy, once we get them off on the right paw, they really, really, really bring us a lot of joy.
Yes, absolutely. It's astonishing. I think a lot of people, when they get dogs, all too often, it's a very impulsive kind of a thing. I mean, I remember years ago sitting in a client's house in a very well-to-do area of Los Angeles. And this man was an extremely successful business person. Obviously, he had done very well in his life. And he had two huskies, and it was essentially a large condominium. Had destroyed, I am not exaggerating, $60,000 worth of his stuff. Oh, they chewed through this antique Persian rug. They had gnawed half the leg off his baby grand piano. Very serious kind of damage. And he was looking at me with an absolute sense of befuddlement. He was explaining to me how he could not understand how huskies, which he had such positive memories about as a child, were causing this kind of damage. And I caught an accent. I'm originally from the East Coast, and I caught an accent that wasn't California. And so I asked him, well, just out of curiosity, where did you grow up? Well, it turns out this gentleman grew up on a farm in Vermont.
Oh, there you go.
So anyway, he grew up probably on 30 or 40 acres with these dogs and had the ability to run all over the place. All he remembered were the positive things about, you know, these dogs that he had as a kid. Never occurred to him, and this was a very bright man, it never occurred to him that the same breed, you know, in a 3,000 square foot condo would respond very differently than dogs on 20 or 30 acres on a farm. And my point is only that all too often people find themselves in a relationship with a dog that, with any luck, could last 15 years, 16 years. But they've done absolutely no research. They've invested really none of their time. And they have no cohesive plan whatsoever to educate this dog. And so there really needs to be, on the part of pet parents or prospective pet parents, a chance to sit back and really consider your lifestyle, your environment, how much time you're prepared to devote to the training and interaction of your dog, and just realistically assess that. Do a little bit of research on breeds. Rescue if you can. I think that's a wonderful thing. But even if you rescue, if you have at least an understanding of dog breeds, you're going to look to rescue a breed that's likely going to fit your lifestyle and environmental circumstances. You're just going to be so much better off. And then, by all means, you know, hire a reputable, positive trainer. You know, for those people that are not at all interested in making training a career, but are simply looking to find a viable trainer out there, you can certainly visit our website. We have a locate a trainer feature on our website. You can connect with the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, the APDT. They have find a trainer functions on their websites. The International Association of Canine Professionals is another group. They have trainer locators. But, you know, research a little bit trainers as well. You know, talk
right.
with them. Get a sense for what's comfortable and what isn't for you. Work with somebody that you're going to understand. A lot of trainers talk in jargon. That's great, but if you don't understand what they're saying, it's not going to do you a lot of good. Some trainers are going to come from a different philosophical place than you are. That's fine, too. Reasonable people can agree to disagree, but you just have to find somebody that's going to match what works for you emotionally and intellectually, and then take the time, and you'll have a wonderful relationship that could last, like I said, you know, 15 years. My Bassett's 14, and he's great.
You go, Buford. You go.
That's right.
Buford, hound of burning love.
Buford, hound of burning love. Buford, hound of burning love. Whose top cue, by the way, is the stay.
Oh,
anybody that has Bassett's will appreciate this. Buford could stay for days. Put him on a stay, and I come back 2 days later and I have to check to make sure he's still breathing.
Well, my biggest challenge, I have a golden retriever husky mix, and when I first got her from the shelter, she was in, bounced around a few shelters for 3 years, Chipper, I call her that because she's happy, and I try to golf, but never do very well. And when I first got her, she could jump my six-foot fence and then come to the front door. So the golden wanted to be home, and the husky wanted to roam, but really, really worked with her, gave her some confidence, and now it's so funny, anything she does, it's to try to get to me, not to run from me anymore. So I've played cards with my neighbor Flo across the street, and if I hadn't shut the gate, I swear she does look both ways. We're on a very quiet street. She's at Flo's door, you know. Hey, I know you're in there. So
funny.
Now she's very well behaved, and I've pet-proofed my backyard and all, so we don't have any husky escapes or anything, but it is amazing what they teach us, and they actually, I think in a way, they teach us to be better people, because we do need to tidy up in our house, and we do need to speak with clarity and consistency, and maybe some of the things that you teach people to be with dogs has probably helped these people become better people around the two-leggers.
Yeah, I think so. Communication, we're coming from understanding as opposed to reaction. Communication that's based on accenting the positive as opposed to the negative, I think. Without sounding too Pollyanna, if more human beings practice that with each other, the world would be a much better place.
I say pause up. We are speaking with Steve Applebaum, president of Animal Behavior College. You can learn more by going to animalbehaviorcollege.com. I thank you a lot, Steve. I think you've helped us on some of the doggy do's and don'ts that we wanted to talk about. You mentioned the flexi leash, which seems to be like the only retractable leash that I would even consider because it's very durable and safe, and it's got your endorsement, so that means
yeah,
a lot. And is there anything else you'd like to give a shout out? You want to sing a song for Buford or something before you leave? Or?
No, if I start singing, you guys are going to have to cut that out. But I will say, you know, since we are in the summertime, and even though a lot of people hear this, there are still people that are unaware of the fact that if you take your dog somewhere in a car, you got to leave the windows rolled down if you're going to leave the dog for any length of time. I mean, the truth is, if you're going to leave the dog for any length of time, you really need to consider whether you ought to be taking the dog in the first place. But assuming that certain situations happen, and sometimes people find themselves having to dash into a market or go somewhere, and they'll leave the dog in the car. And you know what? That in and of itself isn't horrible. There's nothing wrong with that. But park in the shade. Ideally, especially if you're going to be gone for more than 20 minutes, make sure the dog has access to some water. There are lots of portable water bowls that you can bring, and just keep a, you know, a little bottled water with you so that the dog has a drink. And very critically, leave the windows rolled down. It gets like an oven in that car. Dogs can really only sweat out of the bottoms of their feet and their tongue, which means that they can very, very quickly become overheated in a car with the windows closed at 120, 130 degrees, and it's deadly. So
that's
be
a good point. I'm glad.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to stay cool for our, keep our dogs from being hot dogs, but PhDs,
absolutely,
pretty happy dogs, thanks to people like you. At this time, I also want to thank my cool producer, Mark Winter. He makes this show happen each and every week. I don't know how he does it. He puts up with me each and every week. And of course, I also thank all of you for tuning in each and every week. If you have an idea for a show or want to make a comment, you can zip off an email to me at arden@ardenmore.com. And don't forget to sniff around the entire PetLifeRadio.com site. We've got a talented pack of hosts that can teach you on everything about leaping lizards to even paranormal pets. And if you want, I also have a new e-newsletter. You can subscribe for free by just going to my website, ardenmoore.com, and click on the Arden newsletter on the homepage. It's very easy. We have a lot of fun. And warning you, Steve, we may profile you in one of my e-newsletters, so I'm giving you the heads up right now just to frighten you a little bit, you know? So, listeners, until next time, this is your flea-free host, Arden Moore, delivering just two words to all you two-, three-, and four-leggers out there. Oh, behave!
Coast to coast and around the world, it's Oh Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. Oh Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.